This recording is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The focus of this prayer treatment will be number 21 of the 32 planks regarding the system of divine metaphysics that is covered in the textbook of Christian Science, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, from pages 330 to 340 in the chapter entitled Science of Being. The specific title to this plank, number 21, is The Divine Ego. The primary reason the beginning and ending page numbers of the whole group of 32 planks is that the sequence of the titles is very important because it expresses the development of thought that took place as the 32 planks were included in the textbook. And the sequence of moving from one title to another is very strategic, which can only be understood as one gets a view of the total picture. Therefore, it is highly recommended that when one is studying something with many parts, it is best for one to get an overview of the total before one zooms in on any particular part. And the sequence of how the development of thought unfolds in a multi-part topic is also very significant. If anyone has ever studied the scientific way to read a book, this is exactly the same procedure. This is only a small part, and the purpose of this prayer treatment is not to relate to you the proper way to read a book. So we are only giving the part that is so significant for this particular point. Structurally, this prayer treatment will proceed with first reading the entire text of the plank, giving the original text by Mary Baker Eddy, and then it will zoom in on each individual key point, which will be presented in a numbered list. The first thing will be the reading of the original text of each key point, and then there will be commentary which will refer to other resources that related to the specific elements within each key point. We now begin the original text of plank number 21. The Divine Ego. The ego is deathless and limitless, for limits would imply and impose ignorance. Mind is the I Am, or infinity. Mind never enters the finite. Intelligence never passes into non-intelligence or matter. Good never enters into evil. The unlimited into the limited. The eternal into the temporal. Nor the immortal into mortality. The divine ego or individuality is reflected in all spiritual individuality from the infinitesimal to the infinite. This one paragraph has now been parsed into six key points. Number one, the ego is deathless and limitless, for limits would imply and impose ignorance. On page 146 of the textbook of Christian Science, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. On page 146 is stated thus: Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, this further statement that is directly related is as follows. And the topic here is demonstrate divine metaphysics. So the first one was only telling us that there is a system. And this now tells us how to demonstrate utilizing the system. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. And then from page 330, at the end of this paragraph, extending through the end of the chapter, which is page 340, are the 32 planks with separate paragraphs for each one. So we have 32 topics, and all 32 are presented in those 11 pages. And that's what Mary Baker Eddy says. If we understand the letter and the spirit, the letter are the 32 topics. The spirit is one of the seven synonymous terms for God. The seven terms are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Which one of those do you think has to do with the spirit? It's love. Because love is inclusive of all seven of the synonymous terms for God, because love represents wholeness and completeness, fulfillment, and that includes the other six as well as itself, which is love. It's been said that it's not as important what you say as how you say it. Think about that. We need to always be having the atmosphere of love surround all thought, speech, and action. If we do, that atmosphere will melt conflict. What is the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. No one wants to be destroyed. If we treat others that they don't want to be destroyed, why would we even say a foul word about them? One of Mary Baker Eddy's first lecturers was Francis Fluno. One of his key topics that he discussed in his lectures was criticism. He wrote a page and a half letter on it. But with that page and a half, you can spend hours and hours of researching it. Everything in there has been said in one way or another by Mary Baker Eddy in her writings. But above everything else, it appears that this key point takes the prize of being the most comprehensive and important few words on the whole topic of criticism. That is, that every evil has its source in criticism. Every evil. He says criticism leads to all evil. Contemplate that. Is it any wonder why Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every single hour of her waking day to making sure that she didn't have anything in her consciousness? And of course, that includes all speech, all thought, and action that had anything at all that was criticism, period. So that would apply to everything and everyone. And, as mentioned, every thought, speech, and action. She did a reality check, a self-examination, every single hour of the day to make sure there was nothing festering in her thought that was in conflict with the Golden Rule, in conflict with what God is. She was attacked all the time, just like Jesus. Because imagine, 1,541 years had passed from the date of the Council of Nicaea, which was at 325 AD, when there was an agreement made between government and religion that said, okay, religion will only be to appease those members of their church or anyone else that comes to the one running the church. It was generally a pastor or a preacher or a priest, and wants to be forgiven of sins. And the church will be in charge of that. Everything else is going to be controlled and run by the government. What does that mean? That means disease, sickness, and death. I mean, that's everything. Sin, sickness, disease, and death. That's it. That covers the whole existence of material man. So obviously the medical profession blossomed because that was sickness or disease. And death, forget it. No one is going to be able to even attempt to raise someone from the dead because that's out of the control of the religion. Only if you feel you have sinned and want to get some kind of appeasement from some kind of religion somewhere to make you feel better about it. And boy, did the religion go to town on that. That's probably the greatest source of their wealth. People thinking that they're being forgiven of sin, and they pay the church for it. Money. Nothing can be done without money. Money has no power of its own. It doesn't have any intelligence, no wisdom. It doesn't know anything on its own. It has no capacity, no faculty, no functionality. In fact, without mathematics, it has no meaning at all. Mathematics lets you add, subtract, multiply, and divide money. If you don't have a mathematics, which is the thought, the concept, the idea to apply to it, money is nothing. It is just something sitting there, like a pile of dirt. You can't do a thing with it. Well, a pile of dirt, I guess you could grow a plant. So imagine what this Council of Nicaea did in 325 AD. You see, from the time Jesus ascended, which was 33 A.D., until 325 A.D., the church grew. Christianity grew. There were healings of all kinds that took place during that slightly less than 300 years. And the government couldn't have that. Because when you understand what Christianity is all about, which means you have to understand what Jesus was all about, you don't need the government to tell you what to do. You become independent of everything and everyone. Because Christianity teaches one how to think. Shakespeare, his wisdom gave us the quote that is the second quote at the beginning of the textbook. Nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the first quote at the beginning of the textbook is from Jesus, quoted by John, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Free of anything that's not truth. What is truth? Truth is motive. Truth is consciousness. Truth is staying on track. What track? The track of truth. The track of knowing what is the difference between right and wrong. The difference of knowing the difference between divine mind, which is God, and mortal mind, which is brain. The difference between matter and spirit. Spirit is flawless. Matter is full of flaws. And how about soul? Soul is the difference between identifying something with material senses and identifying with spiritual senses. Because spirit is defined as the only real substance. So if you're going to use real substance to define something, you're going to know whether or not you are dealing with reality, which means that it's godlike, or unreality, which is anything other than godlike. Soul is primarily divided into five senses: seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. Seeing is discernment. Can you tell the difference between right and wrong? Can you tell the difference between spirit and matter? Between mortal mind and immortal mind? Life and death? Structure or chaos? That's principle. Structure. Life and death, of course, is life. Truth is whether it's true or false. And love is whether it is fulfillment of perfection or anything less. Anything that's not total fulfillment of perfection is not love. Love is being kind and generous and tender, nurturing whatever needs to be nurtured to bring it to fulfillment. That's love. Think of a mother's love. No matter, let's say there's four children in the family, and each one of them is at a different level. One of them is like a genius, and one of them like really needs help on everything, and the others are somewhere in between. But they're all four unique. They're all four different specific levels of what appears to be intelligence and enthusiasm and everything else that's a part of life. The mother is going to meet every single one of them at their level and nurture them to make them better. Like a gardener. He has to give the most attention to the plant that needs the most caring, the most nurturing, to bring it up to fullness. In the meantime, he can't neglect the others. If a weed shoots up, he's got to get rid of it. If a bug tries to attack its leaves or its bloom, it's got to get rid of it. So it continues to maintain what appears to be a perfect plant, but at the same time, he's nurturing from a plant that maybe is almost dead. Of course, he does something long before it gets there, but he has to give it more attention. And that's what a mother does. A mother gives the attention as required depending on the situation. That's motherly love. That is the love of God. Life also needs to have nurturing. That's normally thought to be a male quality, whereas love a female quality. But every quality of God has to be nurtured within one's own consciousness to raise it to a higher level and make sure it's going forward and not being stagnant or going backwards. The quote that was read about the system says that divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system. What is the system? The 32 planks is not the system. Those are elements. The system is what puts the whole thing together. And the first thing we have to think about is the operators. Because the operators include the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And the Word means all the facts about God. So the first thing we have to do is remember that we have to learn all the facts about God. And that leads us to the elements. Just like in mathematics, you cannot add, subtract, multiply, and divide unless you have the digits of 0 through 9. So they work together. The operators utilize the elements, and the elements are necessary, or the operators cannot operate. So the elements in divine metaphysics are the seven synonymous terms for God. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. The four operators, I mentioned the Word, the Christ, means that no matter what comes your way, you are going to look for the real instead of be influenced by the unreal. If a problem comes up, you're going to say, what is the truth about this? When Jesus saw somebody that had a problem, he didn't accept them as having a problem. He looked upon it with great assessment and contemplation, and he would immediately go to his perfect model in his consciousness. And he'd look at somebody that was whatever, didn't matter. They could be blind, deaf, dumb. They could be, you know, sinning or diseased, or they could be dead, as was Tabitha and Lazarus. But he did not accept them as having those problems attached to them. He saw those as separate and distinct from the individual. It's like trying to get rid of corruption. There may be what appears to be an individual that is extremely corrupt in everything they do, everything they say, every action. So you know it has to come from every bad thought. So their thoughts, speech, and action are rotten. Did Jesus look upon the individual as having rotten thoughts, speech, and action, and that the circumstance was unforgivable? Or did he look upon everyone as being a child of God who was made perfect and who is maintained in that perfection, and therefore what he was seeing with, quote, mortal eyes, or what everyone else was seeing with, quote, mortal eyes, was a false representation of truth. It was a mistake. It was an incorrect view of reality. Genesis chapter 1 says, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. And Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean, in the only. In other words, the only heaven and earth there is what is described in Genesis chapter 1. And that's up through verse 3 of chapter 2. Whenever I say Genesis chapter 1, that's what is meant. And Genesis chapter 2 is meant to start on verse 4 of chapter 2. So when we look at Genesis chapter 1, there are 7 days of delineation. Certain things happen on day 1, day 2, day 3, and so forth. And the last thing that happens begins on verse 26, and that's when man comes on the scene. Man is revealed. Mary Baker Eddy says, instead of thinking about creation, think about revelation. It's always been true, but we were not aware of it. So our thought has to go through the process where it is revealed to us. And in verse 26, it says, and God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. In our image and after our likeness. What could they what could possibly be meant by that? Let. Are we going to permit something to happen? Are we going to let something happen? Are we going to block it? We're just going to reject it, right? At the very beginning. At the onset of the thought, we're going to say no. Or are we going to say, the door's open? Tell me the truth. What really is going on here? Einstein said, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. A true scientist never stops questioning. They keep trying to look under every rock, every hidden truth, so they will see it. In day 1 of Genesis chapter 1, it says, and let there be light. That's before there was any discussion about the sun or the moon. We have to begin by letting the light of truth shine on whatever the topic is. Remember the first quote at the beginning of the textbook by Jesus. He shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Some Bibles say shall set you free. We could just say will liberate you. It's like someone having a giant hand that is pressing down on our head, preventing us from going up in any way, physically, mentally, or whatever. Maybe we're boxed in all the way around, in a shell, in a box. In fact, the the phrase about, you know, get out of the box, thinking out of the box, thinking out of a frame of limitation. Are we going to think outside the box of limitation? Are we going to accept limitation? It's like the thing about, I think it's mosquitoes or something that is in a container with a lid on it. And it will keep bouncing, flying up and trying to get out. And finally it gives up. And when it gives up, you can take the lid off and it still won't go because it thinks the lid is there. Do we think limitation is all around us and therefore we're not willing to peck open the shell like a new bird? If that's where we are, then we have to regroup. So we have to have the right frame of thought if we're going to move up and forward. As Shakespeare reminds us, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Where is our level of thinking? Is it in confinement or in desiring liberation? Are we wanting to think big or be passive and do nothing? Do we want to be afraid of making a mistake and therefore we do nothing? Or are we going to thrive on adventure and learning new things, always making sure that it's truth that we're learning and not facade? Kurt Russell, one of the longest acting careers, because he started as a young boy, and he's still acting. He still takes parts occasionally. He was asked, how is his character in real life different from the parts that he plays in the movies? He said, the movies is fantasy land. My life is reality. Do we look upon a sin, sickness, disease, or death as fantasy land? Mary Baker Eddy relates an actor, and this is back in her day when there weren't movies, there were only plays. And he would hobble, he was so ill and so frail, he would hobble his way to the theater where he was going to be an actor in the play, or where he was an actor. And then he would sit in the chair until his cue came to get ready to go up on the stage. He would be aching in misery in his chair. And as soon as he got the cue, he had a totally changed character. He was a young man. And when he got up on the stage, he played his part out perfectly, as if he was the youngest member in the whole company. They called all the actors the company. So, which one was reality? When he was up on stage, which normally would be thought to be the fantasy land, or when he was in the chair or walking to and from the theater, where he was in pain and agony, which one was real? Jesus looked upon when he was on the stage and everything was running smoothly that was reality, and that anything less than that was unreality. And his thought about that, he was around long before Shakespeare, but Shakespeare got the message. I don't know whether Christ Jesus was the inspiration for Shakespeare or not, but it's certainly possible. Likely, Shakespeare may have thought, well, if Jesus can do what he did, it had to be mental. Because Jesus didn't do anything physical. He didn't take him to a witch doctor. All of the doctors back in those days were called witch doctors, I guess. He didn't take him to a witch doctor. Jesus certainly never went to a witch doctor. And what is the symbol for the medical profession? I mean, wake up, public. It's a snake curled around an object. I mean, is that what you want? Jesus didn't. There wasn't anything Jesus couldn't cure. And there have been other people with the same healing, being a catalyst for healing, just like Jesus was. Mary Baker Eddy's one, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, and Frederick L. Rawson are three in particular that had 15-minute appointments. At the end of 15 minutes, the healing was done. And they churned them out like they were a machine. Wentworth Winslow states that he was doing that for 35 years. Mr. Rawson was much shorter time, because Mr. Winslow got involved when he was like in his 20s. He had the prognosis of death. He was a prodigal son. He was raised in a wealthy family, had the best education, had introduction letters that would let him talk to anybody in business at a high level. And the path was all clear for him to take his part and zoom into financial success. and business success in whatever endeavor he wanted to be involved in. But he took the other path. He thought the enticement of material life and sense in matter, life, truth, and intelligence in matter, that sounded good to him, just like the prodigal son. But just like the prodigal son, he ended up facing two things. Do I change, or do I accept what these doctors tell me that I'm going to pass on? I'm going to go around the corner and never be seen again in this life. I don't know what the next life, if there is one, is going to be like. But he decided, because someone introduced him to Christian Science, and he said, well, I don't know how anything can do any good for me. I'm supposed to be gone. But he thought he would try it. And he was healed. And he was so influenced by what took place that he became a Christian Science practitioner and had a successful career for 35 years. He raised a boy from the dead. He has 4 books, and they're all full of short articles. I think there's about 123 or something like that, articles divided into the 4 books. Any topic you can think of, he's got a page or two, and it goes in depth. It's easy reading, and it's really fun. He's a very talented writer. Joel Goldsmith was turning out so many healings. He was in an office building right across the street from the Mother Church in Boston, which was the first church in Christian Science. And he was turning out so many healings that everybody else in the building, they were all filled with Christian Science practitioners, they weren't getting any business because they weren't performing any healings. Joel Goldsmith was churning them out like a machine every 15 minutes. And he did that for 16 years until finally they all woke up and said, we got to get rid of this guy. He's taking away of all of our business. What it amounts to is that they had been awake before and they went to sleep trying to get rid of the only success. They should have been in his office asking him to teach them how to do it. One person cannot teach another how to do it. Adults cannot be taught. Children can be taught. Adults have to learn on their own because they have to go through this awakening process. That's why the President of the United States right now had to work behind the scenes from 2021 to 2025, where people didn't realize he was the president. He was the president all the time. He was president number 45, 46, and 47. He started wearing a baseball cap because people were not waking up. They weren't aware of what was going on. So he started wearing a baseball cap that said 45-47 on it. Now, what does that mean? When you have a series of numbers and they're connected with a hyphen or a dash, what does that mean? It means from one number through and including the other number. I mean, wake up! What does Genesis chapter 2 say? Verse 6, and there went up a mist. So should you be thinking that everything that follows that is the real story? Or is it all cloudy and mixed up in chaos? It doesn't say anything about you looking through a mist in chapter 1 of Genesis. In fact, the first thing it says is, and let there be light. So instead of having rain, you have enlightenment. If you have enlightenment, you're going to be able to see everything in clarity. A Pharisee asked Jesus, he said, "Good Master, how can I have eternal life?" This Pharisee was a tax collector. He was wealthy in terms of material possessions. I don't know whether the tax collectors were noted for skimming it off the top, or maybe they took the most of it and gave only a little bit to the king. I don't know. I wasn't there. But he was wealthy, and his profession was collecting taxes. And he had everything, except he knew he was someday going to be going around the corner, and that was it. Maybe he knew what I read just recently about when you go around the corner, the only thing you can take with you is what you've given away, and what you have to leave behind is everything you've taken. Well, everything the tax collector had is what he took. Probably to the grave disappointment of everybody he was robbing money from. Probably overcharging on the taxes and everything else. So his whole life and every possession he had was gained from taking. So when he left, went around the corner, he knew he'd have to leave everything behind. No one really has any clue that they can take with them what they have here in material life. So he obviously knew that. So he wanted to know how he could do it. He wanted to take everything with him. So he said, "Good Master, how may I attain eternal life?" And what do you think Jesus said? He started with the very first word. He said, "Why call me good? I'm not good. There's only one good, and that is God." In some languages, the word God means good. The word good means God. It's just spelled with two O's. And Mary Baker Eddy defines good on page 587. And she defines good as being God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. And omniscience means all science, and it includes omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. What does omni mean? One, only, and all. So God has no opposition, no competition. God is it. If God is omni-intelligence, there is no intelligence coming from the brain. Because God is not composed of matter. God is composed of spirit. God is spirit. Spirit is flawless. Spirit is permanent. There are the words right in the Bible. "Why call me thou good? There is only one good, and that is God." How many people believe Jesus is God? Why? Why do they believe it? It says the opposite in the Bible. Because they have been told for generation after generation after generation after generation that Jesus is God. And it started in 325 AD when they wiped out Christianity. That's when it started. They decided that they would call Jesus God. They made it up. It's all facade. It's all fantasy land. Robert C. Putnam, one of the authors listed on our website, is probably, next to Mary Baker Eddy, the most brilliant Bible scholar of all time. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute highly recommends the works of Dr. Robert C. Putnam. His doctorate comes from chemistry. He wrote a book entitled 10 Bible Lessons. It's only 169 pages, and it covers the entire Bible from beginning to end, both Old and New Testament. Every important character in the Bible, every important event is covered. Now, how can he do that in 169 pages? Because it's like an index. It's like a summary. And he has a bibliography that tells you what additional reading you should be doing, and it's all from the Bible. He tells you, you know, the book of the Bible, the chapter, the verse. And sometimes it's an entire chapter. So there's hundreds of pages of references that you need to read and understand in order to understand the summary, which is the 169 pages. I have spent a substantial amount of money trying to get the best resource for understanding the Bible, you know, from Bible, supposedly Bible scholars. And I thought that would help me understand Mary Baker Eddy's writings better. Big mistake. A big mistake. These are the guys that are considered the world scholars on the Bible are the ones that try to convince you that what is stated in the Bible is not true. They're saying, well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could not have gone into the fiery furnace, or that John could not have gone through being put in a pot of boiling oil. If you look at any documentaries, they have the same approach. It's not possible. It's all theory. It's not possible. Because they don't understand the difference between spirit and matter. Yes, Jesus raised people from the dead. Yes, other people have done the same thing. Christian Scientists have done the very same thing. Mary Baker Eddy raised from the dead. One of her students, well, one of the Christian Science students, Bicknell Young, he raised himself from the dead. He had drowned. He could see people viewing his body and lamenting over his death. He made the decision to come back. The whole experience is recorded on our website. Bicknell Young, Y-O-U-N-G. People do not think. They read something and they don't believe it. They will believe something that they've heard time and time again. Every time they go in the church, most churches have a cross with a symbol of Jesus hanging on the cross. Some of them even have the thorns on his head with the image of blood running down his face. I mean, it is so stupid. They should be showing Jesus rising from the dead in the ascension, rising up above earth, rising above the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Rising above all sense of materiality, or him involved in the healings, a picture of Tabitha, or Lazarus, or the blind man. I mean, that's where the focus ought to be. If they're going to have something in the church to remind you of Jesus, that is Jesus. Out of 3 years in his healing ministry, how many days was he considered dead? 3 days. They forget the other 361 days, and they focus on the 3 days that he was considered dead. Or maybe the grief he was going through as a human when he was hanging on the cross. I don't know why people accept what they're told without doing any research. That is why Einstein became so enamored with the works of Mary Baker Eddy. It was the first time he had ever seen a religion that had any science involved with it. He was a scientist. He realized that time was fake. That's what the theory of relativity, E equal MC squared, that he became famous for. He realized that if you're really enjoying what you're doing, time passes by fast. If you're not, it passes by slowly. Does that mean time is a fact? No. It means that time is totally dependent upon the observer and whether they enjoy or not enjoy what they're doing. Some of you have probably experienced the same that I have. You get involved in a project and you can go 2 or 3 days without eating or sleeping. I've done that several times. You've probably done the same thing. You forget all about everything else. All of a sudden, another sun comes up. I've done that 2 or 3 days. Others, many have done that. Scientists that are really into their work, their research, it could be anybody, a physicist, a chemist, or, you know, any of them. How about the ones that discovered quantum physics, quantum mechanics? They discovered that the object they were looking at was not matter, but it was their consciousness of what they created. Remember Shakespeare? He could just as well have said, nothing is either matter or spirit unless your thinking is seeing it that way. Remember verse 26, Genesis 1, verse 26, and let us make man in our image and after our likeness. And then it says, and so God made man in his image and after his likeness. It does no good. We can't benefit from what God did if we have our thought closed to it. If we're believing that our DNA is that of Adam and Eve, we're going to go on living, going through suffering and chaos and everything else that's attached to what the source was, Adam and Eve. We may look at a new babe coming out of the womb of a woman and we say, well, that didn't hurt me. I don't know why it says in the Bible that they took a rib out of Adam and made Eve. And then Eve and Adam got together and they had another baby. I must have missed the whole event, a guy could say. You know, I didn't feel a thing. And yet people believe it. They think that they are born a sinner because Adam and Eve are supposedly sinners when they had the relationship. If we don't accept what Einstein says about curiosity, we're going to be in the dark all the time. We're going to be fooled, tricked easily. Wow, we haven't even gotten on to point number two. We got to get moving here. It's already been an hour. I'm just looking at the timer. You're probably already bored. Probably wondering, when is this ever going to end, this MP3? Okay, let's take a look at key point number two. You see, you only need 32 planks, and boy, you can spend your life studying these. You know, these 11 pages. Okay. Plank number 21. Let's get back over here to the right view. Here it is, plank 21. Okay. So the first one is, just a moment. Okay, the first one was, the ego is deathless and limitless, for limits would imply and impose ignorance. It's like people thinking about Jesus having miracles. He didn't have any miracles. People are just ignorant about what was going on. He was seeing reality. And his thought was so comprehensive that it affected everyone else that was observing the situation. And they also saw the healing. They also saw the accuracy about the truth about the individual. Okay, point number two. Mind is the I am, or infinity. I am. We discussed that. I am this, I am that. God is the only I am. It makes that clear in the Bible. It says, I am that I am. It doesn't talk about Moses being I am or anyone else. Point three, mind never enters the finite. I mean, that should be obvious. If mind is infinite, how can mind enter the finite? The mind of God is not inside our brain. Mind is of the substance of spirit. It's like the seven. Does the seven enter inside us or any other mathematical number? If so, it wouldn't be omnipresent. No one else could use it while we're using it. Or maybe there's only one seven. Then what is mathematics going to do? The only thing that can be eternal is a concept, an idea. Not anything physical. Nothing physical can last forever. Everything physical had a beginning and therefore will have an ending. Everything metaphysical, spiritual, has no beginning and no end. The truth about it may have not been revealed to you or me or someone else or maybe everyone that is presently on the planet today or on any planet, if there's other living people on other planets, which there appear to be. But the reality doesn't change. Truth doesn't change. Truth didn't have any beginning, or it would have an end. And if it had an end, it wouldn't be eternal. And yet, the definitions of God indicate God is eternal. The very first definition in the summary of the first 13 chapters, which is in chapter 14, recapitulation, says, and it's on page 465, it says, God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite. And then it gives us the seven terms for God. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Incorporeal, no body. Jesus could not be God. He tells us he was not God. How about divine? Divine means perfection. Supreme. It's above everything else. In fact, it's the only thing there is. And infinite. No limit in any direction. None. I mean, you can be thinking in the infinite. You can instantly imagine yourself being somewhere else. Maybe you saw a movie, or you've seen pictures. I mean, today you can do research on almost anything, especially if you're not using a particular search engine that is censoring everything that it doesn't want you to know about. One of the best search engines you'll find is StartPage, StartPage. Another one is Brave, Brave. Brave.com. I think the URL is search.brave.com. Start page, all one word, .com. If you use the most common ones, you're not seeing the whole picture. Wikipedia, before the present people have controlled it, it was a great resource for information. The guy that sold it claims he made the biggest mistake of his life because it turned in from being a source of accurate information to propaganda. If you looked at what the results were from it 20, 30 years ago, right after whenever it was that it was first established, and now, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it's the same name. So he's trying to get a new one established so that it will take on the integrity that it was originally designed for. Okay, that's point number three. Mind never enters the finite. A lie can never be true. And anything that is real truth can never be a lie. It's the same thing. Point number four. Intelligence never passes into non-intelligence or matter. We've been talking about that. Point five. Good never enters into evil. The unlimited into the limited. The eternal into the temporal. Nor the immortal into mortality. We've discussed that for this whole hour. Six, the divine ego or individuality is reflected in all spiritual individuality from the infinitesimal to the infinite. In other words, if it's true, it's unrelated to quantity. Quantity is only a human concept. The same as time. The same as place. There's only one place, and that is here. There's only one time, that is now. There's only one God, and that is the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On page 587, she has another definition of God that emphasizes a few different words. And we should be very familiar and quickly memorize all three definitions. God on page 465, God on page 587, and good on page 587. And on 587, she says, God is the great I am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. And I'd previously recited to you definition of good, but I'll do it again. It's very quick. Good. God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. If this is true, that God is omniaction, can there ever be an accident? Can there ever be an accident if God is all action? An accident indicates that there's a conflict, that harmony has left principle. Principle is all balance, all harmony. So that means there is no principle or no foundation for the basis of an accident. If we understand what was just stated here, you will never believe an accident to be true. You may observe an accident and you can confidently declare, this is not reality. There is no accident in divine mind. There is no accident in spirit. There is no accident in soul or principle or life or truth or love. Because everything is perfect. Because God is in control of every action. God is every action. And therefore, there is no such thing as an accident. It's impossible. That's how we should think. That's how we should talk to ourselves. And depending on the circumstance, maybe others. And that's how we should act. That doesn't mean if we're in a house that's on fire that we just sit there and say, there is no fire. We better be getting ourselves out of there while we're talking. Run out of the house, and while we're running, we claim the truth about it. There is no fire. I know of an individual that was living in Southern California, and she was at the top of a knoll, and everything below her was on fire. And the fire people tried to get up there, finally made it, and they said, you've got to evacuate. You're going to be consumed by fire in a few minutes. I don't know, maybe they got there by helicopter. It's been so many years since I talked to her, I don't recall. And that's no excuse, because mine never forgets. See, I made a mistake right there, thinking that I didn't recall it. She said, no, this home is protected. I'm not going to leave. They finally gave up and they left. It probably was a helicopter. The fire was all out, and her home had not been touched. Her lawn had not been scorched. Everything on the perimeter of her entire property was left totally untouched by the fire. She had a commitment. She had a commitment to know the truth about her home. What is home? Home is our consciousness. What do we have in our consciousness? Do we have destruction or permanence? What is our concept of life? Shakespeare was beyond his years when he made that statement. But that was just at the very beginning of the awakening from the Dark Ages, which had been dark since 325 AD. So, hundreds and hundreds of years before Shakespeare came along. That covers all six key points. And one thing I want to do is take a look at what John L. Sinton says about this plank number 21. He did a very thorough multiple-year study of everything in the textbook. And he sometimes really reveals some things that we may not be aware of or didn't think of, and he puts it in such a wonderful scientific way of itemized lists and so forth. So let me see what he says. His first point is the divine ego, and he reminds us that that's really the title of the first of the paragraph. He says, the I am revealed to Moses, the divine being, are all indicating the one infinite individuality. So he's going back to Moses, because that's what I had quoted to you. I am that I am. That was what Moses heard God tell him. I am that I am. The second point, the great fact common to all three terms is oneness and wholeness. Oneness and wholeness. Well, that's what love is. His third point, this divine ego or being can never enter into an opposite. It has no cognizance of opposites, and therefore is a law unto itself. We talked about there being no opposition or competition to God because of the word omni, one, only, and all. This is stating the same thing. And his fourth and last point is, this ensures perfection and perpetuity of all individuality throughout infinite space, throughout infinite range. This ensures perfection and perpetuity of all individuality throughout infinite range. And again, the topic is the divine ego. We have to understand that we should never think of ourselves as being anything other than the image of God. So if we say, I can do this, I know how to do that, any confidence we have should be knowing or having an inkling of understanding about what God is, because we are the image and likeness of God. And we should be devoting our efforts to the awakening in an ever-expanding degree of that fact. Any success we have in any area of our life, we should be giving credit to the one and only real source, which is God, divine mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. That's the real source of everything for everyone. Remember, Mary Baker Eddy did a self-examination every hour to make sure she was thinking rightly about everyone and everything. Don't even think about forgiving anyone of anything. Well, the only reason we would ever forgive anyone of anything is if we've condemned them. So do the prevention. Don't condemn anyone for anything. It is not our business. What someone else does is not our business. Unless it's a dependent, like a child, or somebody disabled that we're in charge of, a guardian for, then it is our responsibility to make sure that they understand who they are. Children are never too young to learn the truth. Teach them immediately after birth. If you have a new birth in your family, start teaching them at the very beginning, and they will have a totally different life than they would otherwise have. They will have no fear. They will have success in everything they do. They will be joyful. They will be following the golden rule like it was a matter of life and death, which it is. That's the kind of children we need to have and nurture and maintain in that perfection. God is all there is. There is nothing but God. Frederick L. Rawson used those words with total understanding and had an instantaneous healing for someone where he observed an accident. It's on the website. This prayer treatment will close by reciting the scientific statement of being from page 468 in the chapter on recapitulation. And feel free to substitute words where it refers to matter. If you have a situation you're dealing with, trying to heal it, put the name of the problem in there where it says matter. And where it talks about man, say, I am this or that. In other words, claim it as applying to you individually, as an individual manifestation of man. You can put those words in there. I am an individual manifestation of man, therefore this applies to me. That is a very healing way to approach the scientific statement of being. I know of healings that have taken place doing that exact thing. Here it is, the scientific statement of being by Mary Baker Eddy, page 465, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures. There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. It is January 14, 2025, Wednesday, at 07:55. The title to this prayer treatment is plank number 21 of 32. The title specifically to this plank is The Divine Ego. There are a couple of topics that I did not complete, and one of them was the four operators, and they are on the home page or in the menu. It is suggested that you read thoroughly everything that's on the home page, and many of the very important feature definitions are in the far left column, and featured authors are in the bottom horizontal section, including the ones mentioned today. And all the authors, there's over 100 of them, that are in the menu under authors. So very top section of the long comprehensive menu. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on the Divine Ego, plank 21 of 32. The end.